Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, Steve Williamson here. Mike Costantino sitting across from me.
Good morning, good morning.
And Gary LeMaster, who's one of our producers.
Good morning.
And we're going to talk about a jolly happy topic of the sequester today. How did we get into it? The calculation is that the sequester is going to cost about 700,000 jobs. Just when we need more jobs, we're going to have 700,000 less jobs.
750,000, according to this Congressional Budget Office.
Yeah, it depends on the fact. Let's stay in the ballpark, because if we try to get too specific, we're going to get different sets of facts and different, even though they're in the same area. But how did we get into this mess? Well, Gary and I are going to talk a little bit about that. It starts back with the debt ceiling debate in 2011. And before all of this happened, there had been some games played about the debt ceiling by both Republicans and Democrats. But in 2011, the Republicans escalated this monumentally and were willing to cause a collapse in the United States credit to its, it would be a default to our creditors.
It's money already spent.
Yeah. So the debt ceiling, I think one reason the administration was sort of weak on this is that the debt ceiling, it was about money already authorized by Congress. In other words, Congress had already authorized the money. They came along a few months later and figured they needed to borrow some more money to pay for Congress's spending. And the Republicans decided to use that as leverage. And they did. And so the sequester, and I'll give you a short thing. The sequester comes out of this. And we talked about what sequester meant. Sequestration was, suppose there's a piece of land next to an important dock or something. Two parties claim they own it. The court sequesters the property so neither person, neither party to the dispute can't sell it or whatever. So that gets expanded to the use of sequestration. They tried it once before back in the Reagan administration. Didn't work, and they finally abandoned it. But they tried it once before, and this time so the idea has been around for a while.
It only came up when the Gang of Six, or the so-called super committee, failed in negotiations. There were six congressmen, senators assigned to it. And when the negotiations failed, then they came up with this idea of let's figure out something that would be so horrible for the economy that neither party would be willing to accept it.
Yes.
And that was the whole idea behind sequestration. And when it was finally, the negotiations were complete and they had raised the debt ceiling, Boehner was asked, who is now saying this is President Obama's idea, is totally his, at the end of negotiations said, I got 98% of what I wanted. I'm happy.
Yeah. Right. And so that's how the sequester starts. And it starts as a solution to the United States being held over the barrel to not paying its debt.
Well, it was a solution that they thought would never go into effect.
Right.
Cutting medical research, cutting unemployment benefits. They thought, we'll never do this.
Cutting
defense.
It's
too extreme. It's too crazy. I guess you could fault the president for never seeming to realize how crazy the Republicans are. I mean, he assumed that they wouldn't do it, or I guess he wouldn't have agreed to it, or was he just, he didn't have much choice, or what do you think, Gary?
Well, let's put it in perspective, and it's not how crazy necessarily the Republicans are, it's how crazy the Tea Party is, because there's a difference between the factions in Congress. Boehner apparently was, from everything I've read, was willing
right.
to agree to a grand bargain of a combination of tax cut or a combination of cuts, spending cuts, and new revenues. But Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan were basically responsible for undermining it and refusing, you know, to bring the Tea Party along, expecting that they would win in in last year's elections. So they wanted to put this whole issue before the public and during the campaign.
They did, but the public didn't react the way they wanted. They reelected President Obama by 5 million vote. There's some gerrymandering that has kept the House in Republican hands largely. But
and the polls show that the public is pretty solidly behind President Obama's economic plans and his combination of raising revenues and cutting spending.
Why doesn't that make a difference?
The balanced approach is very popular, sir.
It's very popular. Everybody or the large majority favors it. Why doesn't that matter, Gary, Mike?
Why doesn't it matter that the public are behind it?
Yeah. Why is that? I mean, President Obama's reelected by 5 million votes.
Right.
And it's a rejection of all the Republican ideas by most of the American people.
Yeah.
And why doesn't that affect what the Republicans are doing?
Well, I think, like you already alluded to, one of the reasons is that the Republicans controlled so much redistricting that there were only 35 seats. 35. Some people, 35 to 45 seats that were in play this last election in the House. And the extremists got in. The Tea Party, as Gary said. And so they're not interested in anything that is reasonable or popular. They're interested only in advancing their ideology.
Because they have safe seats, right?
I was going to say in a word, it's ideology.
Ideology.
That you have Republicans, traditional Republicans, that are afraid to be primaried. They're afraid that if they vote for anything that goes along with President Obama, that in the next coming election or primary, they'll have a Tea Party candidate who's really extreme that is going to run against them, and they'll lose in the primary.
So roughly, President Obama is trying to negotiate this deal with the Republicans. They came very close to doing it. The Tea Party faction basically vetoes having it done.
Right.
They put together a super commission that's supposed to come up with solutions to all of this, some sort of compromise, and they can't do it. And so then they set up the sequestration, which is supposed to be so terrible and so stupid, frankly, to just cut everything across the board without any kind of logic or any kind of nuance. It's a really bad, bad idea. And they said, well, nobody will do that, but it's happening.
Here's the problem is if you watched any of the Sunday news shows, Boehner is against the sequester. He calls the cut silly and dumb. McConnell, on the other hand, Mitch McConnell from the Senate, said that he thinks it's necessary. And then you have on the other side Howard Dean, for example, from the Democrats, that says that I think this is just fine, that we may never get another chance to cut defense spending, so I think this is actually good.
Yeah. Defense spending has been beyond criticism for a long time. So there are some Republicans and there are some Democrats, and Democrats say, look, we'll never be able to commit. And if you watch or listen closely to the process by which defense spending is done, so much of it is not even wanted by the Defense Department. It's wanted by a particular congressperson whose district some sort of plant or something is. Now, in Arizona, what's the figure? We're the sequester is apparently going to cost us $43 million in money that would have gone to military bases. There's other military spending in Arizona that's going to be cut, but $43 million are going to be cut from military bases, $17.7 million from public education, and of course Homeland Security is cut. Everything is cut equally.
Oh yeah, I already mentioned job programs, right here in Yavapai County, the Workforce Connection. The Maricopa County Workforce Connection that trains at a time when we're trying to put people back to work. Maricopa County is training 250,000 people a year. They're cutting that. And of course, unemployment benefits after 26 weeks are going to be cut. This is why people said it's a stupid thing to do.
But Mike, everybody's bored with this whole sequestration.
Yeah, this is
even though it's going to have a lot of impact, particularly it, you know, what happens, folks, is who gets hurt every time we do anything? Poor, vulnerable people, the elderly, struggling for jobs, and
those
are guys who are going to get hit hardest, right?
This is a yawner. I've sent you an email.
Why are people yawning, Mike? I mean,
well, because we've seen this act before. This is what these guys do. This is like your silly uncle that shows up and he's going to put his underwear on his head, you know, after he's had a couple of drinks at the party. So these guys, this is Lucy in the football. You know, why are we going to get all? No, we're going to sit here and read all the horrible things that sequestration is going to do. It's going to the jobless, the cutting the Centers for Disease Control, for God's sake, the Food and Drug Administration. Who wants to not inspect meat? We're going to cut all of that stuff, but with across the board. No, we're not going to do any. These guys are going to, any minute now, this is what we think, any minute now, somebody's going to come on and say, oh, yeah, they got a deal. And we're going to say, okay, then we're the smart ones because we didn't fall for it. The guys like me.
We didn't get all emotional.
The big yawners over here are saying, okay, so I told you that this is what they do. And well, quite frankly, this is what they do.
There's another reason that I think people are yawning is that, you know, it was signed into effect on Friday night, 1st of March, and we woke up yesterday over the weekend. We woke up this morning, and it's a little like the Mayan apocalypse. There's no visible effects yet.
That's right.
And in fact, the president has said over and over again, you know, it's going to take a while to come have an impact. But I don't think people pay attention to that. They pay attention to the fact that they're not huge lines at the airport yet. There's not a reduction of nobody's died of salmonella poisoning yet because the FDA can no longer inspect stuff.
And these things are going to be coming along over a period of time. So, you know, you're going to see some impact immediately, but it's going to be in areas that probably don't affect the majority of the public. So they're going to look at it and say, so what? You know, it'll get fixed.
And there are more crises coming up. There's they have to have come up with a budget. You know, budget authorization is coming up this next month, and the debt ceiling crisis is coming up yet again. So,
and they're determined to use those as levers to get even more spending cuts.
Yes, and so. The spending cuts come largely from domestic programs. We should say that Medicare, there are some spending cuts in Medicare when it comes to the payment to hospitals and doctors. But otherwise, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are spared these cuts.
And essential defense is spared the cuts.
And central defense. But what happens is, I think what the Republicans are counting on is that these things like, cutting all this money, $538 million from the National Science Foundation, cutting $445 million from the Center for Disease Control. How smart is that? And $2.39 billion from the National Institute of Health. They'll think that they're going to use this as leverage to cut Social Security and Medicare. In other words, these cuts are going to damage American standing in the world. They're going to damage our research possibilities for decades. Because once researchers don't do something, companies do a great job of doing research on stuff that they think is going to lead to things that will make them a bunch of money. And what the government does is fund the research that doesn't have an immediate or immediately perceivable economic benefit, right? It's more general stuff. It's more background stuff. That's being cut tremendously.
And it may not come back for decades. I was listening to I think it was the head of the Center for Disease Control saying that these cuts are going to cause the scientists to leave. Because they're not going to have the money to pay them. And so they're going to go somewhere either to private industry or they're going to go someplace, maybe into education. And it's going to take, you know, as much as decades to get a staff of qualified scientists back to do the work.
I did talk to a doctor from a foreign country practicing here, and she kind of shrugged her shoulders. She says, okay, I'll lose 2%. And I'll go on. Now, you know, open your mouth. Say, ah. I mean, you know, she was, that was her.
The cuts to
Medicare.
To Medicare. She said, I'll lose 2%. And okay, but, and part of behind that was compared to where the, what she had been through, the losing 2% of her income was, you know, it wasn't, it didn't make her suicidal.
Yeah, and then as the affordable health care comes into effect, there'll be more patients who have money to pay, so forth and so on, and that should compensate.
Well, that's true. Looking down the road,
in 2014, there's some things coming on board. Most people don't know, folks, that the deficit has been going down each year for, I think, for the last 3 years. That the cost of the Medicare, what's the figure? Do you remember, Mike? $800 million overestimated over the next 10 years. In other words, Medicare is actually costing less than anybody calculated. So remember when the calculation, the further out a calculation is, like Social Security is going to go bankrupt in 2036, the further out it is, the less accuracy you have. So it's hard to know what's going to happen next year, much less 30 years from now. We can't calculate all the technological innovations and whatever.
Underneath this part of the conversation is that it has to be dealt with. Medicare payments at some point has to be dealt with. Social Security organization at some point has to be dealt with. But so far they haven't come up with anything that is even close to being an effective way to do it.
Well, the problem with Medicare, quite honestly, is that for about 2 or 3 decades, the cost of healthcare, overall healthcare is been rising at a factor far greater than inflation. So as the costs of healthcare go up, so do the costs of Medicare. And if you're going to, this was the whole problem with the debate over Obamacare, is that if you're going to solve the deficit problem long term, you have to deal with the cost of medical care. And if you want to deal with Medicare and Medicaid, you again have to deal with the cost of Medicare. There was a statistic I saw the other day that they've been putting, the Obama administration has been putting more regulators in place on Medicare. And for every dollar that's been spent on tracking down Medicare fraud, they've gotten $7.90 back. So there's been tremendous fraud in the program for a long period of time, in addition to these super inflationary costs of healthcare. So those, that's one of the critical issues of our budget long term.
Well, the Walmart effect, the fact that all these people that don't have healthcare at work are going to the hospital, getting medical care, and they make no bones about it anymore that anybody with insurance is paying for it. I mean, that's why pay.
Is this the right time to cut spending? And not only, let's assume that this is a really stupid way to cut spending. Is it the right time to cut spending when we're still not really out of our economic slump, our economic depression?
Every economist says this, and we talked about it just before the show. Every economist says you deal with the deficit during the time things when are pumping along. You spend money to stimulate the economy. You spend money on the downside. You cut when you have money. It's just like, people are always comparing the national economic situation to a personal one, which is ridiculous, by the way. If we handled national economy like I did my personal finances, we wouldn't have a road out there to drive on. The whole place runs on credit. It runs on big time credit. The infrastructure, the bridges, we'd still be doing buckets over the Verde River.
Well, there's two other factors. One is the interest rates are incredibly low right now.
It's a great time to borrow money if you're
exactly.
Borrow money.
So if you want to build infrastructure, our infrastructure is crumbling across the country. If you're going to rebuild the infrastructure, now is the the time to do it because all of those projects are built on credit. They're all built on bonds. And so now's the time to do it.
And the Republicans have claimed there's going to be inflation, but there isn't any inflation. Year after year, there's no inflation. Interest rates are very cheap. This is the time to borrow money. It's time to invest in the country. And instead, we're just cutting everything across the board.
So let's look at our crystal ball. Go ahead, Gary. I'm sorry.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is if you want to see the potential impact of this, look at Europe. You know, England went into an austerity program.
Right.
And it tanked their economy.
Right.
Several other European countries decided to push austerity. And what they got for it was another recession. So they're in a double dip recession. If we think that we can make drastic cuts and not impact our economy and potentially send us into another recession, I think that's crazy.
No, yeah, it's one of those things that sound good, but it's a terrible idea. Yet it plays to a certain, but really, really ultra conservative ideology.
Well, the whole austerity thing. It's not like. See, what Gary and Mike are saying is the people advocating austerity, let's cut spending right now. You can look at five countries in Europe who did just that and ended up in worse shape than we were when they started out in a lot better shape than we were. So it's obviously not the smart thing to do.
We have a fraction of our GDP, by the way, who are in, you know, we are much better off than they are. We are much more stable than they are. Our economy is pumping along even with everything we've been through compared to their economies. So we don't need to do what they did in order
My sense, for whatever it's worth, is that the economy is finally, people are getting optimistic. This is the terrible thing about this happening now.
Right.
People were finally getting optimistic. Things were finally picking up, and now we're doing this.
The housing industry has come back, yeah.
Housing, geez. Anybody that knows a realtor on any level knows that housing is just taken an incredible turn, and real quickly. I mean, Maricopa County is doing extremely well on many because of inventories down, prices are up, land is selling again. Now, the local realtors, at least one of them, says that we are about a year behind, 8 months to a year behind the Valley of the Sun. And so that's, they're salivating at this coming back, at least somewhat having a real estate market again that people buy and sell houses and the short sales and all the other things kind of take a backseat.
I see this as a unwillingness, a continued unwillingness to invest in the country. I mean, cutting scientific research. I mean, eventually we'll end up being, despite our wealth, we'll end up being a second rate. And if we don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. China's going to do it. Korea's
going to do it. John McCain got on the radio, got on TV yesterday and said the military deserves better than these cuts. You know what? Everybody deserves better than these kinds of cuts. I mean, this is such a stupid way to do it.
You could do a lot to cut in the military just by starting to institute bid contracts again. Something like 80% of all military contracts are non-bid contracts.
Is it around 80%?
I think so.
Figure? I know that the figure of the non-bid contracts is really amazing.
It's gone up. But I'd like to talk about, if I can, just for a moment, on the human cost of this. You know, we have people that are many, many people that are homeless. We just went through the Newtown massacre where we start talking about mental health in this country. This sequester is going to have a huge impact on with cuts to mental health.
Yes.
So now it's totally counter to what we're trying to accomplish. And I just saw a thing the other day that 50 million people in the United States don't know where the next meal is coming from. Now, that's before the sequester cuts. We have 17 million kids that have an unstable food supply in this country. You know, our hunger issue.
Medical care, right?
Yes.
It'll cut medical care to the kids that are in a,
we'll
in
be
a
putting
fragile situation.
We'll be putting people back on the streets, you know, people that were homeless that got government assistance and got a shelter, and many of these people are working poor, are going to be put back on the streets because of sequestration. Now, why have we gotten to a point where we simply are more concerned about keeping tax cuts for the wealthy than 50 million people that don't know where their meals are going to come from?
And even tax loopholes. We could get all of this money from beginning to tax the oil industry at the rate we track under other industries. And there's one of Mike's favorite folks that we've talked about before is what he calls a Robin Hood tax, which is a tax on speculative.
FTT, financial transaction tax, is the other official name. Yeah. Robin Hood is a little, flighty, but, you know, that's me.
But that's a tax on transactions, economic transactions, and it affects people who are day trading, who are doing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trades a day.
So computer trading.
Yeah, computer trades. And it's made investing, even in a market like ours, where the stock market has been going up year after year after year since the president took over, difficult for ordinary individuals to make any money out of. And the amount of money that a little tiny tax would generate would cover the entire deficit.
One of the amounts being thrown around at half a cent per trade is like $143 billion, in 2013 alone.
Yeah.
So many things get better with a
half
a cent.
So why don't we ever talk about any of these other things? All we talk about is the deficit. And I think, again, folks, we're not saying, I don't think any of us are saying that the deficit is not important or the deficit doesn't need to be dealt with. But you got to kind of, hold on to your whatevers and wait till the right time to do the deficit cuts, to get all scared and get all hysterical about the deficit in the middle of a situation like we're in now and start cutting everything is just not smart.
In the blame, aimed at Obama is puzzling, because if you look at the growth of federal spending, these are actual figures from the CBO. Under Reagan, it grew 8.7%, the federal budget. Under Clinton, it grew at 3.2%. Under Bush, George W. Bush, it grew at 7.3% in his first term and 8.1% in his second term. And under Obama, it's grown at 1.4% and dropping.
And the deficit, if nothing is done, and I think we should do something about the deficit, if nothing is done about the deficit, in about 5 years, it'll reach the same percentage of the GDP, the gross domestic product, that it did under the first Bush. You've heard all this stuff, but if you actually look at the charts and the graphs and the economic information, it's not a time for hysterics. It's time for careful choices.
One of the things that is growing is the membership of Democrats of the Red Rocks, one of our helpful organizations right here. Some of them, like me, are just growing in girth, but we do have our monthly film, we do have our monthly meetings, we have our monthly breakfast. We do not have monthly meetings, I take that back. Democrats, one of our helpful organizations here on Democratic Perspectives.
It's a ways away, but March 21st, we're having Professor Harriet Young, longtime Democratic activist,
yes,
great speaker.
Great show.
I love Harriet. She always has new ideas. She always has some study that the rest of us has missed.
She's one of those,
some cool interpretation.
She's one of those teachers with brains and personality and wit.
So
she has wit.
She'll be here.
What's going on with Dove? Democrats of the Verde Valley is our other organization.
Our next meeting is going to be a reorganization meeting.
Oh, we don't want to talk about it. Forget
meeting.
That. That's
so,
enough.
So
sequestration makes me yawn.
Yes, but what about the movie? Dore has a movie coming up on the 23rd, right?
Yes, we do. It's
a library.
Rape in the military. It was nominated for an Academy.
The Invisible
Award.
The Invisible
and
War.
It didn't win the Academy Award, but it came close.
Apparently. At the Sedona Library, it's 6 o'clock, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's on March 23rd. And so,
all right,
folks can make it.
We have, we have this and all our shows on vvid.org, vvid.org, carries all our podcasts. Gary does a wonderful job of print synopsis. If you're not a listening kind of guy, you can read a lot about this. vvid.org. We'll see you next time.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.